This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars, episode number 32, was recorded on July 15th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Jeff Snyder is back with us today, and it wouldn't be Jeff Snyder without a slide deck. Listeners, you can find the slide deck download link on our homepage at macrovoices.com in the description of this interview. Jeff, you've got a great slide deck that has a whole bunch of information about the juxtaposition of Fed funds and IOER. Why don't we start by defining these terms? What is the Fed funds rate? That's been around for a long time. And then we'll come back in just a second to IOER.
Well, the federal funds rate, the effective federal funds rate, is the weighted average of these transactions, actual transactions that take place in what's called the federal funds market, which is a specific piece of a global money market system. Now, the Federal Reserve traditionally had instituted its monetary policy by moving a target within this federal funds market called the federal funds target. That ended back in December of 2008. What happens today is the Federal Reserve defines a range within which it allows the effective federal funds rate to move. It's a 25 basis point range where they set an upper bound and a lower bound. And within that, the Federal Reserve says, well, as long as the federal funds effective rate stays within that range, we're okay on monetary policy.
Okay, Jeff. So the Fed funds rate is the rate which banks charge other banks for short-term unsecured loans when banks are lending to each other. And the Federal Reserve tries to control the market by setting a target for that interbank lending rate. What is IOER, interest on excess reserves, and how does that play into this story?
Well, IOER is what the Federal Reserve will pay banks to park these excess reserves, and excess reserves refers to bank reserves over and above what is required for each of these banks to hold as reserves. And so what the Fed does is it pays a specific rate on those excess reserves, so long as these banks put those reserves with the Fed. And therefore, that's supposed to help manage the federal funds rate within the Federal Reserve's policy range. Because what the Fed is doing, unlike what it did before the crisis period, where we just specified a target, the Fed has realized that, hey, they can't just specify a monetary target for the federal funds anymore. And therefore, it's mostly trying to influence the effective federal funds rate within its policy range. And what it believes is that by paying a rate on excess reserves, it will influence banks' behavior within this specific market.
Now, one of the criticisms that's been levied by internet bloggers and various other people is, hey, wait a minute. If we have the Fed paying interest to banks on excess reserves at a rate that's higher than the Fed funds rate, that creates an incentive, effectively a risk-free carry trade for the banks to go borrow a whole bunch of money at the Fed funds rate, put it into excess reserves, and get paid a higher rate of interest from the government for having it. Is that true, that there is effectively a risk-free carry trade there? And if not, why not?
Well, it's not really true that there's a risk-free carry trade, because that's exactly how it's supposed to work. That's how the IOER is supposed to influence the federal funds. Now, the reason that I present federal funds in its entire range is because, again, it's a weighted average of many different transactions that actually take place in the market. And so when you look at the entire range of federal funds, some of it goes above IOER, especially over the last year. And the way this is supposed to work is that by paying a specific rate, it's meant for banks to not look at it as a carry trade, but as an arbitrage opportunity. If part of the federal funds market range goes above IOER, not below, but above, what that's supposed to do is give the banks the incentive to take the money out of these excess reserves and put them into the federal funds market. That would therefore, in theory, the IOER rate would help policy rate become a ceiling, whereby the effective rate would not go too far above or even near IOER, because banks have an incentive, an arbitrage incentive, to go back and forth between excess reserves getting paid at the Federal Reserve window and putting those excess reserves into the federal funds market as needed. So when the federal funds rate rises within the range, you know, that's supposed to trigger this arbitrage process whereby banks actually help out the federal funds market. They add excess liquidity out of the Federal Reserve's pocket and put it into the federal funds market, which is, again, a positive thing. It's not a carry trade. It's an arbitrage.
Okay. So basically what the Fed is doing is they're saying we can change the interest rate that we're paying. And if we keep it at, let's say, 2%, that means as soon as Fed funds transactions start going over 2%, there's a financial incentive for anybody who's got excess reserves to stop taking the Fed's 2% and take the higher rate, which is available by lending it to another bank. And because they have that option available to them, effectively IOER should put, in theory, a ceiling on top of the Fed funds rate in order to cap it at whatever level the Fed doesn't want it to go above. Is that the essence of it?
Yeah, it's even, you know, greater than that, because you go back a year and before, in theory, it was, you know, the effective federal funds rate would never even get close to IOER because of that incentive. Again, the federal funds range was sufficient that, you know, as soon as transactions went above the IOER rate, it was believed that, you know, why would a bank continue to get paid IOER when they can take an equivalent rate, effectively risk-free in federal funds that is a little bit higher? And so there would always be an incentive based around IOER for banks to go back and forth, to take their excess reserves and throw them in the federal funds market if there ever arose a situation where they were needed in the federal funds market, as represented by the federal funds effective rate rising within the range.
Okay, so the theory of it is the Fed can contain, or should be able to contain, the Fed funds rate by creating a ceiling using IOER, which is a policy rate directly under their control. Let's now look at the actual data, starting on slide 3 in your presentation deck, and see how that theory maps to actual reality.
Yeah, if we go back a year to the beginning part of 2018, what we saw was that, you know, the federal funds market behaved pretty much the way it was supposed to. The early months of the year, the entire federal funds range was pretty much less than IOER. The effective federal funds rate was pretty well behaved. And so what happened around February, March, we started to see things in the global marketplaces. You had a sell-off in stocks. You had some things, you know, the dollar stopped falling and started to go sideways. It started to get a little bit more pressure in foreign exchange and those kinds of things. You also saw the federal funds rate, the effective rate, EFF, and its range start to rise within the Federal Reserve's policy range. So that by you get to the point of June of last year, middle of last year, it was sufficient enough that the Federal Reserve itself decided that it needed to do something about the federal funds rate, which is already an interesting position because, you know, as much as we talk about the Federal Reserve and the federal funds market today, it's no longer a big part of the global money system. And it's nothing like what it used to be, certainly compared to the pre-crisis era. So the very fact that we're even talking about federal funds and taking it as seriously as we are, including the Federal Reserve itself, it's an important clue that there's something going on out there. And there's something that's been going on for well over a year now. Now, on slide 4, we go back to June of last year, the Federal Reserve decided, hey, the effective federal funds rate's rising within the range. Therefore, we got to do something about it. We can't just sit here and let it go up and up and up and up. So they undertook what they called a technical adjustment, which meant they set IOER 5 basis points below the upper bound of the policy range. Now, previously, they had set the ceiling at the upper bound, which meant they set IOER equal to their policy, the upper bound of their policy target range. So now they're going to set it 5 basis points below because they were trying to do what we were just talking about, Eric, which was we're going to give banks 5 basis points less on their excess reserves parked with the Fed. Therefore, they have even more incentive to take those reserves out of the Federal Reserve and put them back into the federal funds market. And that, in theory, should pressure the effective federal funds rate back down toward the middle of the policy range. And in fact, in the July and August 2018 minutes, they made a special mention of it. They said, hey, there was something going on in federal funds that reflected some special factors, what they called special factors, and they expected that it wouldn't be nothing more than temporary. What they were saying with these special factors were they were related to tax reform late in 2017. What that did was it increased the federal government's fiscal deficit, which meant that they were going to issue more T-bills, which primary dealers then had to absorb. And because they had to absorb what they called a so-called treasury bill deluge, that meant that primary dealers had to fund all of these bills in the repo market, and that pressured the repo market rate, which increased. And then therefore, it added an alternative rate going up, including LIBOR, which then influenced the federal funds rate as well. And so because of these special factors, what they thought were special factors that would prove temporary, in addition to the technical adjustment in IOER, what was expected in June of last year was that all of this would be temporary, and then within a couple of weeks or even a couple of months at the most, nobody would talk about federal funds anymore, because that's the way we should be. We should never have to talk about the federal funds market, because it is such a small and unimportant place.
All right, Jeff, let me just make sure that I understand this, because previously what we see on this slide is that the Fed funds rate was consistently staying, as the theory seemed to dictate, well below IOER. And then it started creeping up, and now it's getting to the point where it's just barely at IOER or maybe getting ready to exceed it. Now, help me if I'm misunderstanding this, but it seems to me that all that can mean is they've created this incentive that says, look, as soon as the Fed funds rate starts to get to the same as IOER, there's an incentive for the banks to take their excess reserves and lend them to other banks because they can make a better return on it. It seems like what must be happening is the banks are afraid to lend money to other banks. They're willing to lend it to the Fed at a lower interest rate than they could get on the open market. They must be afraid of the other bank's ability to repay, or am I misinterpreting what this means?
No, that's exactly the point, Eric. And I think that's the wider issue here is what is going on here? Why is the theory not happening in practice? Why are we talking about the federal funds market to begin with? Because, you know, it's supposed to be a risk equivalent to what you could get on IOER. There's really not supposed to be any risk between, you know, banks lending to each other in federal funds overnight, what's unsecured or not, or parking those excess reserves at the Federal Reserve and getting IOER. So there really isn't supposed to be any impediment to what's going on in this interbank market. Now, if you go to slide 5, of course, by the time we get to October, that's really when markets started to exhibit their more haywire behavior. You know, stocks started to fall. You had the oil market go into backwardation. You had all sorts of you know, the treasury market yield started to fall. So by the time we get to October, what we see in federal funds, not only did those special factors not appear to be very special, they didn't prove to be temporary at all. When the Fed was talking about them last summer, the effective federal funds rate was 4 basis points below IOER. And when we get to October, the effective federal funds rate finally matches IOER. It finally gets to the ceiling. So again, your point is the valid one where, you know, what is going on in the federal funds marketplace where banks are choosing to get less? And given the range of the federal funds market, they're choosing to get a lot less, keeping their reserves parked with the Fed and using them in the federal funds market.
Now, Jeff, I just want to clarify the meaning of these percentiles on the chart here. That range of Fed funds means that the least creditworthy banks for interbank lending, they're paying at the top of that gray range. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I don't know if I would call it least creditworthy. It's just for whatever reason, on whatever day, you know, maybe a bank has to borrow a little bit extra and other banks are charging them more. But with, you know, whatever the hierarchy is on a particular day, that's what happens. The banks that pay the most are at the top end of the range. And so there's, you know, there's a pretty decent range there where if you're a bank who has excess reserves getting paid IOER, there's opportunity here in the federal funds market to make a much better return. I mean, a much better return. So, you know, again, your point is, the question you ask is a valid one. Why aren't banks taking advantage of what is an arbitrage opportunity?
Right, because as we look at the very left edge of this slide back to January 18, you can see the gray just barely occasionally goes above IOER, creating that incentive. But for the most part, all of the gray range where the Fed funds market operates is below IOER. Now we're at the point where all of it, or almost all of it, is above IOER. So the banks are saying, we're not lending money to other banks. We would rather take a lower return for the safety of keeping that money on deposit with the Federal Reserve. So does that mean bankers know something we don't about the banking system?
Well, that's what's implied. We obviously don't know what's going on in any of these markets. And remember, federal funds is one piece of an overall whole. So there are other things going on. And so we're trying to infer from all of this behavior that at the very least, something is going on here.
Okay. So what happens next?
Well, if we get to slide six, we get to December where things are going crazy pretty much everywhere. As the Fed did its last rate hike, they did another technical adjustment to IOER because, again, they're trying to influence the federal funds effective rate such that it stays within the middle of their range. They don't want it to get too high. They obviously wouldn't want to get too low either, but they're trying to keep it from moving too much further up in the range. And so they thought, well, you know, all the stuff that's going on in these marketplaces at the end of 2018, that's all temporary too. We'll do another technical adjustment to IOER to give banks an even greater incentive to take funds out of their excess reserves and put them into the federal funds market.
Oh, I see, Jeff. So this is a transitory effect that doesn't mean anything. And I'm sure it has nothing to do with the offshore Eurodollar system that the Fed never mentions. Help me understand what's really happening here.
What's really happening here is the Fed and monetary authorities are starting to become a little bit more nervous about this stuff. Because again, Federal Reserve, if nothing else, their one job is the federal funds market. That's what they've said for years and decades, that, hey, we've got the federal funds market. We know how to do it. It's the one thing we can do right. And so you start to ask questions. If they can't do the federal funds market right, what can they do right? And so I think what happened, especially at the end of last year, what influenced partly them to go from hawkish rate hikes to a Fed pause and now to rate cuts is the idea that, hey, people are starting to ask questions about the one thing they're not supposed to be any questions about. You know, after two technical adjustments and, you know, the thing is not working the way it's supposed to work, the Fed isn't influencing the federal funds market of all things the way it's supposed to influence those things. And it raises all sorts of questions about technical monetary competence and therefore any number of questions beyond it, big, big picture type stuff.
Okay, Jeff, so moving on to slide seven, if we go back to the beginning of January 19, Fed funds stayed equal to the IOER ceiling, in air quotes, for most of the spring into March. And then it looks like we actually saw the Fed funds rate move above IOER. What's going on?
Well, yeah, again, we have to ask, why aren't banks taking advantage of what is a substantial arbitrage opportunity? What is the impediment here going on in the entire global monetary system? And then, of course, as you pointed out, we get to March 20th, and suddenly the effective federal funds rate moves above IOER, which tells you that almost all of the federal funds transactions that are taking place in the market from that point forward are taking place above IOER. Why aren't banks taking advantage of this arbitrage opportunity to the point where it becomes an open question? Because if IOER was supposed to function as something like a ceiling, even though, you know, monetary policy officials would admit that it's a soft ceiling, but still, here we have a very visible violation of the way things are supposed to work. Going back to March 20th, it was a very visible change in the way this is supposed to work. You know, it signaled very clearly that something was going on in this federal funds market, which represented, because federal funds is such a smaller part of the overall whole, that something must be going on in the wider system. And so the fact that the federal funds effective rate moved above IOER was an important clue that whatever was going on, not only had it not ended, it didn't prove to be transitory, it wasn't being affected by these technical adjustments, and oh, by the way, it just got a little bit worse.
Jeff, moving on to slide eight, it looks to me like something popped. Like, you know, it seemed like everybody thought that it can't go above IOER, but when it did, it kind of let go and went further above IOER, and it seems like it's never looked back. If I look down here, there's been a lot of fluctuation for the last 2 or 3 months, but the lowest that Fed funds got was just a hair above IOER. So what's going on here?
Yeah, I think that's the wider point here, especially given how we've progressed from the Fed pause in terms of policy to now there's definitely rate cuts coming. They're going to start at the end of this month. And what that means and, you know, what we're really talking about here. You're right. Something popped. Something broke. On March 20th, when the effective federal funds rate went above IOER, it was as if it was a warning bell. something changed. And it's very clear, even though, go back for the last year, even though the effective federal funds rate had been rising within the range, it had been a much more orderly system. You can see it in, straight lines mostly across the entire way. But as soon as it moved above IOER, it's like the whole system went haywire. And again, what we're interpreting from that is, why are the banks not operating the way they're supposed to? Why are they giving up an arbitrage opportunity to get, not only to get the federal funds rate below IOER, but operating in an orderly fashion? That's what we really see here is there's disorder in the one place. There shouldn't be anything like that. Federal funds market is not supposed to be an interesting marketplace. But what we've seen over the last several months is that it's very interesting and for all the wrong reasons. So you get to slide 9. What did the Federal Reserve do at its last meeting or its meeting back in May? Rather than address directly what's going on in Federal Reserve, they tried a third technical adjustment to IOER. All that did was just basically prove that IOER doesn't work the way it's supposed to work in theory. And therefore, there's obviously something else going on in the marketplace beyond the way the Federal Reserve has constructed its policies about not just the federal funds rate, but the entire understanding of the money market system.
Okay, Jeff. So basically what we've got here is a set of policies and a whole methodology that's clearly not working, and some force is influencing it that doesn't seem to fit within the narrative that policymakers tell us about how these things work. Moving on to slide 10, is there anything in your Eurodollar research that might explain what's going on here?
Yeah, Eric, as you and I have talked about many times, especially the quote that I used from Robert Roussa back in 1984. The reason I use this quote that we're showing on slide 10 is because I think it's a perfect description of what we call the Eurodollar or the Eurodollar system. I've highlighted it in red here. New networks of interbank relations that made possible the creation of additional supplies of dollars outside the United States and beyond the control of the Federal Reserve. To me, that's a perfect description of what we call the Eurodollar system, because it's centered on these interbank markets, these long chains of Eurodollar liabilities that stretch all the way around the world. And oh, by the way, it's centered offshore and outside the control of the Federal Reserve. We spent a lot of time talking about how that played a huge role in 2008, the market breakdown. It wasn't a subprime mortgage panic so much as it was a Eurodollar issue. Now, what happened, because we're talking about federal funds nowadays, which we're not supposed to, the Fed is starting to feel the heat. They have to explain why the one thing that they're supposed to be able to do above all question is misbehaving the way and misbehaving so obviously. So what happened last week was the New York branch on their Liberty Street Economics blog published a pretty extensive blog post mapping out what are very complex relationships between all of these money markets, including federal funds. The blog diagrammed all sorts of things that we talked about before, like the repo market, the relationship to the repo market, how the primary dealers fit into the entire system, and all of that. At the end of this blog post, they sort of, an almost, oh, by the way, there's also this offshore dollar stuff that goes on. And what they said was, it's pretty incredible stuff, especially coming from FRBNY. And I'll read it here. They said, another important piece of the puzzle is the offshore U.S. dollar market, given the key role that the U.S. dollar plays in global trade and finance. Similar to domestic entities, participants located abroad also own U.S. dollar businesses and need U.S. dollar funding. Therefore, an offshore U.S. dollar market exists and incorporates, among other participants, foreign banks and foreign branches of U.S. banks. In other words, they're finally starting to admit that, okay, the money market stuff that we've been talking to you about and describing since you were little, since we go back to the 1970s and 1980s, it all seems so very simple in theory. The Fed targets a specific rate, the market obeys, and it influences the economy from that predictable relationship. Oh, no, that's not how it actually works. This is much more complicated than we've ever let on. And oh, by the way, there's this offshore system, there's offshore part of this dollar system, which is even more complex still. And what I've done is, and then slide 11, is compare what they wrote in July of 2019 to what Robert Roussa was saying in 1984. It's almost exactly the same thing. Last week, FRBNY writes that there's a web of interconnected relationships between both onshore and offshore participants, which is nothing more than those new network of interbank dollar relations that Robert Russo was talking about. And on slide 12, there are parts of this market that go beyond monetary policy, that go beyond the central bank's capability, what they call where the Fed does not intervene, which they're trying to put it very charitably and in the best of terms, which is nothing more than, hey, there's this offshore dollar market that's beyond the control of the Federal Reserve that actually may be influencing the overall behavior of not just money markets, but the global economy.
Okay, Jeff, let me make sure I understand the implications of what you're saying. It sounds like the point is if the global euro-dollar system provides a source of global U.S. dollar liquidity in the international market, and that system is not delivering all of the liquidity it's supposed to deliver, that means there's more demand for dollars. If there's more demand for dollars, people want to borrow them, and they're willing to pay higher than IOER in order to borrow them. Is that essentially the gist of it?
And the other part of it is why aren't banks rising to meet the demand? You know, what are they seeing? What are they observing? What kind of behavior are they undertaking internally that is preventing them from answering that demand? And so, you know, what we're getting at here really is that even the Fed is starting to come around to the point that, hey, there's a lot more going on here than you've ever been told about. And, oh, by the way, the going on here is this offshore dollar market that plays a very central role in how the system actually works and how it behaves. And from that, we obviously know that the global economy is influenced by the behavior of this offshore U.S. dollar market.
Okay, so the offshore U.S. dollar market needs more dollars. It's willing to pay a higher interest rate. That part makes perfect sense to me. But as I understand this, the data that we have, public data, shows us that there's plenty of excess reserves in the banking system. So there's lots of banks that are looking at this whole thing from the sidelines saying, yeah, I see what's going on. The international guys from their side of the playing field, they're running in. They want dollars. They're willing to pay up for them. We've got these dollars, and we're taking a lower interest rate from the Fed for holding them as excess reserves. We've got the opportunity to step out on this field, and we can take the money. These guys have got, you know, fists full of euros that they're ready to pay in interest to borrow some dollars, and we can take those euros and we can put them in our pocket. I think we'll rather stay on the sidelines and just keep our money with the Fed. Why are they doing that? That's really the question we have to ask ourselves, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the answer to that is to have the same liquidity fears and uncertainty, however you want to characterize it, as what's going on in the marketplace. They're hoarding liquidity. And whenever you hear the term hoarding, that's never a good thing. What it means is that the marketplace, even the people who have liquidity, they're not spreading the liquidity around the way the system needs them to do it. And because they're not doing that, it's leading to all sorts of bad behaviors that are increasing and escalating. And the reason they're not spreading it around is because there's obviously liquidity issues and a monetary issue in the wider system that we can't see beyond federal funds.
So what we have is a situation where bankers are looking at what would be a risk-free arbitrage as long as the system continues to function and nothing goes horribly wrong. And they're deciding to pass because bankers, we know, are not that greedy. Wait a minute. Something's wrong here. They're passing on a risk-free arbitrage. The only plausible reason that they could want to pass on it is because they're afraid something is about to happen where they're going to value that liquidity so much more than whatever interest rate they could have gotten on it now. Is that the essence of it?
That's the only reason you would hoard liquidity.
Okay, Jeff. Well, we've come to the end of our 15 minutes for this particular All-Stars episode, so we're going to have to leave it here. But before I let you go, just real quickly, please tell our listeners where they can learn more about what you do and follow your work.
I'm at alhambrapartners.com. We're just a registered investment advisor in the United States and in Florida, offering portfolio management services.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jeff. Well, we'll look forward for another one of these 15-minute updates in a couple of weeks. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.